This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Audrey Raj, and with me in the studio today is
Arvind Yuvaraj. It's a Wednesday, which means that we're only 2 days away from the long Chinese New Year weekend.
Whoop-de-doo!
We've also got an explosive story on Samsung and how much effort they're putting into making sure the fiasco with the Note 7 doesn't happen again, which I think is really commendable on their part.
Mm-hmm.
But oh no, wait, odds. Look, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
No, it's Super Sexist Man.
Oh, I bet if he was a superhero, he wouldn't rescue any women. But no, jokes aside, we have a serious issue to address here. And if you didn't really hear the giggling in the background, Angeline Tay is in the studio with us to talk about this very serious story. Hey, Angie.
Hello.
So a few days ago, a Chinese investor made waves because of a statement he made at a public presentation in Beijing. So this is in his own words, okay? This is what he said. We usually don't invest in female CEOs.
Ooh, and of course, this sparked public outcry, not just in China, but around the world. Lu Mingxiong, that's the Chinese investor, still isn't backing down after he made that bold and extremely short-sighted, misogynistic statement.
Mm. Yeah. So what happened is Lu Mingxiong, the founder of Beijing VC firm called Jingbei Investment, gave a presentation on his 10 no investment principles. And within that 10, it was what you mentioned before, he listed female CEOs are non-investable. And his reason for that is that they are as negative because they are dishonest and unable to learn. And that's not it. Hey, here's in his own words, yeah. What else did women do better than men except giving birth?
Oh.
Of course, the public went berserk after he said that. I can just feel my own blood boiling.
Mm-hmm.
He went on to do an interview with This Week in Asia. Apparently, he's not backing down from his statement at all.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the problem. He went on to say that only 2.5% of Chinese CEOs are women. However, that is the second highest percentage in the world, behind only the US and Canada, which is at 3.2%.
Mm. Yeah, there's also a point he highlighted that most investment firms in China hold a similar view. And that's when I remembered, hey, Gobi Partners, which is a Chinese VC firm, but has been investing in startups here in Southeast Asia as well. So I went ahead and have a chat with Victor Chua. He's a vice president at Gobi Partners, and what he thought about this, you know, article.
When I first came across the article, I really thought it was a clickbait or some hoax just to grab attention. But I think it's quite saddening the fact that there are still some investors who think like that. Well, arguably, in China, it's probably part of the subconscious that some of the investors think that females are just not capable in making decisions. I mean, for us, at least in terms of Gobi, we are pretty much gender indifferent. We just want to make sure that you're a good entrepreneur, and that's it. Like, you probably noticed that we have quite a number of female founders or female co-founders in our portfolio companies, the likes of, like, Recommend, you have Jasmine, Youth Today, we have Jazz, not just in Malaysia, but in other countries as well. Like in Indonesia, Trevor Leo, who we have Christina. In Vietnam, we have a company called Trip Me. One of the co-founders is actually mom of three kids. Her name is Ha. So to that extent, I do think that female co-founders bring a very different perspective that's very constructive to the whole business. Because as male, you are built genetically to think from a certain angle. Whereas if you have a female co-founder, you are bringing diversity to the team. You are bringing or a new perspective which could help the business to address a large market that consists of a lot of female buyers. At the end of the day, you are seeing a lot more businesses that are mushrooming, revolving around ladies. But you have the fashion startups, Zalora, even local ones like 23, things like that. So all these are trying to address the female crowd. And who's better in understanding ladies than the ladies themselves? So I think we are a strong believer that you should have diversity, you should have respect for entrepreneurs regardless of their gender.
Because Gobi Ventures is a Chinese VC, right? Do you feel that it's harder to be a female entrepreneur or female founder in China compared to Southeast Asia?
Yeah, for us, even in China, if you skim through some of our portfolio companies, like iTrip, a few other ones, they are ladies who are leading the companies. It's actually much harder for ladies to manage a startup because of the hours, especially so when they have family, when they have husband and when they have kids. Because of that, I think in some ways, female entrepreneurs are much more sustainable, or they can take the pressure better than some guys. And these are all circumstantial, but definitely we as a firm, we don't really care whether you are a guy or a girl, as long as you show that you are a worthy entrepreneur.
And that's true, isn't it? I mean, if you're able to surpass all that pressure from society and decide to set up a company, then hey, that's perseverance. I mean, that's some serious determination.
Yeah, and that's all the qualities required to be an entrepreneur.
Nah, that's true. All right, thank you so much, Angie. We've got some music for you right now, a song especially going out to Lu Ming Xiong. Here's The Shop Assistants, I Don't Want to Be Friends With You. Enterprise Biz Bites, we'll be right back, BFM 89.9. We're back on Enterprise Biz Bites with Arvin and Audrey. So our next story is going to be a bit of a good news, bad news situation here. We've done some reports on previous Biz Bites episodes about how there will be more hiring this year. I think Job Street released a report a couple of weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm. But then we've also seen reports and how Malaysia's hiring decline is probably going to get worse in 2017.
Yeah, I guess it depends on a bunch of factors like type of industry and how much in demand those industries are. Anyway, according to a roundup of online hiring insights from Monster Employment Index, or MEI, in Malaysia, 2016 closed off with a negative 5% year-on-year decline in online hiring in December.
Okay, so a little background on the monthly Monster Employment Index. Let's just call it MEI. Mm-hmm. It's basically a gauge of online job posting activities, recording the industries and occupations showing the highest and lowest growth in the recruitment activity in total. So from these insights, Monster can provide some forecasts for the future for online hiring activity right here in Malaysia.
Yeah, and 2016 kicked off with a negative 28% year-over-year decline in overall online hiring activity in January. And I think the keyword here is online, quote-unquote. Mm. And then over the last 12 months, Malaysia continued to show a decline in online hiring activity, with the steepest dip coming in February of 2016 at a very unfortunate negative 39% year-on-year number.
Yeah, because February especially was a pretty slow month for the job market, where most sectors saw the steepest annual decline in hiring activity during that time.
Yeah, and then in subsequent months, the decline in e-recruitment fluctuated before finally slowing down in quarter four of 2016. So basically, if you want to nutshell this thing, on the average, Malaysia had an overall negative of 15% decline in annual online hiring in 2016.
So Monster.com has weighed in on this trend by saying that the overall online recruitment, it slowed down in Malaysia in recent months, and this is likely to remain for like the first half of 2017. And much of this is driven by external factors such as global economic uncertainty and the influence of the declining oil industry, as well as, of course, our weak ringgit, which undoubtedly will have an effect on the local labour market over time.
Yeah, but there is a sliver of hope, though. I mean, since we're looking for silver linings, Monster also makes it clear that the latest MEI figures in December and November have showed a slowdown in the decline across the board, which probably indicates slight positive hiring sentiments.
And I think this is mostly for sectors such as technology, where the government will be focusing more on this year. Like, they're putting in place tech-friendly policies and measures to ensure sufficient opportunities in the tech space.
Yeah, and it also shows that Malaysian businesses are expecting to increase salary, revenue, and export and employment in 2017. So, like we said earlier, it's a bit of a good news, bad news situation, but I'm going to focus on the good news. Thank you very much.
All right. So this reminds me of the Grant Thornton International Business Report, which polled over 2,000 businesses in more than 30 economies. And you'll notice that it highlighted Malaysia has the highest percentage of businesses that are expecting to increase wages in 2017 compared to other countries in Southeast Asia. I guess it's only January, so we'll have to wait and see how much of this is true, because our local landscape isn't exactly known for increasing wages and all that. But I'd love if this was actually true.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, back to Monster's report. Here are some quick highlights from the Monster Employment Index. There are no indications of improvement for the banking and financial sector in quarter one of 2017. As of December 2016, this sector saw a negative 12% year-on-year decline. As per Malaysia's MEI, the average annual decline for this sector in 2016 was a negative 19.
The good news is that Malaysia's IT sector will likely see positive growth in Q1. Overall, the sector still saw a negative 12% year-on-year decline in 2016, but the pace of decline has slowed significantly come the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and Malaysia's marketing sector wants to be mysterious and vague. It might grow or it might not. There are pretty much mixed signals here. On average, Malaysia saw a negative 11% year-on-year decline in hiring in this sector. And lastly, demand for HR professionals may see improvement in the first quarter of 2017. When looking specifically at the demand for HR professionals in Malaysia, the year kicked kicked off with negative 22% year-on-year decline in January, followed by a negative 29% year-on-year decline in February, the steepest decline recorded in 2016. On average, the sector saw a negative 12% year-on-year decline in 2016. That's a lot of percentages.
Yeah. All righty, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, there's that explosive story on Samsung like we promised. Stay tuned. Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9. And we're back. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes with Arvin and Audrey. So after explosions, recalls, and months of bad press, Samsung is going to try to put the long drawn out Galaxy Note 7 saga behind it once and for all by releasing its long promised official findings from its internal investigation.
Yeah, and I think that many Samsung users looking for an upgrade were waiting for this, and Samsung really needs to do this as damage control and to kind of save face and, you know, get that user confidence back. The Note 7 saga really, really hurt the company's credibility.
Yeah, and before we get into the findings of this investigation, let's do a quick recap. The Galaxy Note 7 looked like it had the potential to be an iPhone killer when it first hit. You know, it was so popular, it looked great, it received overwhelming positive reviews when it first launched.
Yeah, but then after a number of incidents with the volatile phone, with the phone either overheating or catching fire or just downright exploding, Samsung recalled the phone on September 12th. And then a month later, after releasing a fixed model of the phone, the incidents kept happening and the company recalled the second wave and, you know, just like killed off the Galaxy Note 7 altogether. At the same time, Samsung promised that it was going to get to the bottom of what caused the issues and it ensured that it would never ever happen again.
So, and just this week, they called for a press conference in Seoul to release the investigation findings. And I tell you, it was jam-packed. There was no seats available. Samsung detailed what it says caused the defect in both the original model and all of their replacements. The company also detailed new plans to prevent any future issues with its phones.
Yeah, so DJ Ko, who is the Samsung Mobile chief, kicked off the PC by deeply apologizing to customers and business partners before adding on a somewhat positive note that some 96% of all 3 million Note 7 Note 7 devices sold had been returned. I mean, did you know that they employed more than 700 engineers to diagnose what's wrong with the phone and like three independent investigative firms? That's huge. I mean, that's more than the workforce that Apple has working on its iPhone cameras.
Yeah, I mean, that's commitment, right? So what we understand from the PC is that the exploding phone incidents were caused by the battery cells. Deflections in the negative electrode is what they called it. So that was the issue with the first batch of batteries. Then melted copper was found in the second batch due to a short circuit that occurred during welding process.
So essentially, the push toward the larger battery, thanks to increased consumer demand, led the company to manufacture a cell with less protective cases. That ultimately led to greater likelihood of contact between insulated elements, be it through manufacturing defects, dropping, or other factors.
And a second replacement battery didn't have the same manner of design defect, but the company's rush to address recall units ultimately may have introduced a similar manufacturing defect into the process, leading to an even more distressing second recall of all the devices.
One thing I was super impressed with is that Samsung didn't stop with the addressing of battery issues. It also cited a number of potential design issues leading to a potential short circuit, including higher battery density, poor welding, missing insulation, and sharp edges. So their further conclusion was that they needed further investigation.
Now this is what I call transparency, because if Samsung wanted to just do some damage control, they would have stuck to talking about the battery defects instead of going on to address all the other potential problems that the Note 7 could have had. So that's dedication and pure transparency, if you ask me.
Yeah, so DJ Ko also explained that the company is taking responsibility for its failings while implementing a broad range of internal processes to ensure that the product safety and quality is their number one priority. The company will add new training procedures to and employ additional testers on future phones, along with an 8-point battery safety check on phones that includes simulated 2 weeks of continuous phone usage in various scenarios.
That's the way you gain consumer confidence. You know, go above and beyond what you need to for your customers. All right, we've got some music for you right now. Enterprise Biz Bytes will be right back. BFM 89.9. Enterprise Biz Bytes, Arvin and Audrey still keeping you company. So here's a quick recap of the stories we covered today in case you just tuned in and are kicking yourself for missing most of the show.
Yeah, so we started with Chinese investors saying female bosses are bad for business. This dude has some serious, life issues. I have a theory that he came here from, 1745, in a time machine, and he must have felt like so at home in that time. And then he got here and mouthed off, and then he's like, oh no, it's 2017, you can't say this stuff.
My theory is his wife is still giving him the silent treatment.
Yeah, I'm sure she is.
Then we highlighted some new insights released by Monster.com, which reported that Malaysia witnessed sluggish online recruitment across most of 2016, and this slow hiring intent is likely to roll over into 2017.
Yeah, and lastly, Samsung's Note 7 fiasco. The company called for a press conference this week, and they served up a full and humble apology for the exploding phones and their replacements, as well as laid out plans for an 8-point battery safety check. So no dodging of responsibility. They just laid out the truth and promised to only give their best with their following releases.
Yeah, remember, all the links to the stories we covered today can be found on the Biz Bytes podcast page. Go look for it on our website, bfm.my, or our brand new BFM app, available on the App Store and on Google Play.
Yeah, so that's all the time we have on Biz Bytes today. Up next at 12:30 is the Breakfast Grill replay. Hans spoke to Professor Anthony Sage, Director of ASH Center for Democratic Governance and Innovation at Harvard University. Ooh. And they discussed the tide of nationalism that's rising. Could Xi Jinping.
Yeah.
Oh, I butchered that name. China be the next superpower to fill the void left behind by America's waning influence in Asia. That's coming up next.
Yeah, and we'll be back same time, same place with more Biz Bytes tomorrow. Till then, my name is Audrey Raj.
And I'm Arvind Yuvaraj, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.